Game over, man. Game over.
You're gonna need a bigger boat. Why so serious?
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Well, welcome to this podcast review for February 13th, 2023. I am JD Duran, and for those familiar with our show, you will see another face that is not Brendan, Ryan, or Jay. Instead, for this review, I'm very excited. First time joining us here on the show is the great Megan Kearns from the Spoiler Piece Theater podcast. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I love being introduced as the great Megan Kearns. I feel like a magician.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah, love your work.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I know that you got a chance to see Magic Mike's Last Dance. In fact, it was one of the first reviews I read after seeing the film over the weekend.
Well, thank you.
And so I felt inspired. I wanted to reach out so we could get not just have a discussion on the film, but of course get the female's point of view. And, you know, and given the film and what it's trying to do, that felt appropriate than just having two straight white guys talk about this movie. So, I really appreciate you being here. We'll just get one of those this time. But yeah, very, very excited to dive into the world of Magic Mike once again and the wonderful Steven Soderbergh. Before we get to Last Dance specifically, though, I want to get a little bit of context from you on your experience with perhaps Soderbergh himself and specifically the Magic Mike universe. The Magic Mike CU. What is your experience with the Magic Mike movies?
So I've seen all of them. I had seen the first film when it came out initially in the theater, and then I missed Magic Mike XXL because the first one I enjoyed, but it didn't blow me away, so I kind of missed it. But I did watch it in preparation, and I rewatched the first one.
Okay.
All in preparation for seeing the third one, so I would be prepped and ready to go.
All right. Yeah, I'm a little similar to that as well. But maybe a little bit reversed. I saw Magic Mike not right when it first came out, but maybe a few months later. Mm-hmm. So it was shortly after. It was within, you know, the year it was released. Magic Mike XXL, though, I did go to a theater to see. Of course, it was very full and loud and rambunctious and really an unforgettable experience. Maybe somewhat similar to The Last Dance as well. But I liked both movies. Mm-hmm. I really liked the first Magic Mike. XXL was a very different experience, but ended up liking that as well. So I was looking forward to this third one, and Soderbergh is back in the director's chair after just doing the cinematography for XXL. It stars, of course, Channing Tatum, Selma Hayek, and really just it's those two and then a bunch of others that come and go throughout the film, which I'm sure we'll get into. So, Megan, let's get into it. What did you think about this third installment, Magic Mike and His Last Dance?
Yeah, I'm still suspicious if it's actually his last dance.
I agree. Yes.
But assuming that it is, at least for the moment, it's fine. Mm-hmm. I actually wish it had been worse or a lot better because I feel like if it had been worse, could have been campier, could have been a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. Everything is just fine. Like, I do love the cinematography. I always love Soderbergh's cinematography. And I love Channing Tatum. Always do. I think he's extremely charismatic, very magnetic. He is an incredibly interesting dancer to watch. I love seeing him perform. And he just has a real natural ease to him. But I find that he and Selma Hayek-Pinault, whom I like, they don't have chemistry, sadly. And I feel that the movie really hinges on whether or not they have chemistry and whether you as an audience believe that they have chemistry. And for me, they just do not. It's devoid, sadly.
Yeah, I don't think that you're necessarily wrong. And I'm pretty much with you. I do like it, but I certainly don't love it. Mm-hmm. But like other Soderbergh's, I could see this growing on me over time because I do think there are some good things here, even if at its core it's just a 90-minute trailer for Magic Mike Live.
And very much so.
That really is the biggest problem here. The script is very thin. There's no connectivity to the previous two films, which is okay. I don't mind when sequels try to stand on their own feet, but if you're going to disregard what came before, you need to establish something new and render a different trajectory for Mike, which it doesn't. As we were somewhat joking about earlier, in fact, it's almost verbatim the same plot as XXL, where Mike is once again done with stripping, only to find himself in a position for one last dance. Mm-hmm. Really, the only difference here is that Mike is tasked with directing this new show, whereas in XXL, he was going to that convention to dance specifically. But in terms of motive and basic plotting, it's essentially a carbon copy of XXL. However, the structure of it and how it navigates character is weirdly reminiscent of the first Magic Mike, mm-hmm. where it tries to explore the boundaries of performance in Mike's personal life. So the film is this confounding concoction of the first two films regarding motive and framework, but simultaneously, on the surface, it has nothing to do with them, and that approach just doesn't work, I think. Mm-hmm. It renders the film both redundant and disjointed from a writing perspective. But that said, as I noted, there are a few things here to appreciate. The dancing and choreography is great. The last dance,
oh my God,
if you will, I think is worth the price of admission alone.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly provocative and exquisite, pun intended. And while uneven, the Mike and Max relationship, it's a double-edged sword for me because there are elements to it thematically that I do like, that I appreciate. But as you're talking about, the chemistry just isn't there. So again, a microcosm of what this film is on the whole. So not great, certainly a little disappointing.
Could not agree more. Yeah, I really love the concept. And I know I said this in my review, but I love the concept of an older woman with a younger man who are both, you know, very sexual, very sexy, and embracing that. Mm. And that's great. But it just doesn't translate, sadly, with their chemistry on the screen. But yeah, that last dance, I cannot stop thinking about it. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
It is really great. Now I do love the buildup to it because there's this interesting duality that while, you know, between Mike and Max, there's a little bit of a contradiction at play that they want each other, yet because of how they respond to each other at times, it creates a little bit of conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, specifically, I think of the moment where Max is on stage and one of the male dancers is coming on to her, and there's a cutaway to Mike where we see him getting a little bit envious. So what does he do in retaliation? Is he grabs one of the girls and starts dancing close to her. And so there's a conflict at play that in the end, with that last dance, again, it's not Mike and Max. It's a different girl. He's engaging with her in this really provocative way, but the tone of it has changed. It's not about retaliation. In fact, the whole tone of that sequence is that it's meant to be a mirror of how he feels about Max.
Right.
And I want to really like that. Like that on its own terms is great. Is it a little uneven, perhaps a little unearned in how we arrive there? Yeah, perhaps. But man, you can't deny the choreography though.
Oh my God.
And that dance, they make it work. It's very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading about the choreography of that, and because it's the same two choreographers throughout the entire trilogy, and they said that they were practicing in a garage on a tarp with, like, throwing buckets of water as they're sliding around.
Yeah.
Like, well, kudos to you, because that final dance, it's just stunning. It's jaw-dropping. I loved it. And the dance sequences are and were my favorite components across the three films. So I am really glad that it leans into the dance choreography so heavily in this one.
I agree. We do get a lot of dancing And this is where, again, it's that concoction of the first two films, because Magic Mike XXL had no plot, really. It was this aimless journey that was all about the camaraderie of our central group, and the film was better for it. And this film tries to have that a little bit, but it also wants the traditional storytelling within Soderbergh's, you know, style anyway, of what we got in the first Magic Mike. It's trying to do both. I don't think it works. It certainly is a disservice to this film. Mm-hmm. But when the film is emphasizing that choreography, I mean, there's really no denying not just the movement of it, but the visual allure as well. And it is really great. And I guess I don't want to give too much away for those that haven't seen it, but The Last Dance does involve tarp and water in ways that I don't know if I've ever seen before.
No.
I mean, maybe other films have depicted this. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can't recall.
It's very reminiscent, of course, of Gene Kelly and Singing in the Rain, but yet not at all. And because when I'm watching it, you know, logically you can make that connection because sure, there's dancing in the rain, obviously, but they're nothing alike in their movements, in the choreography, in what's happening, in the kineticism. So yeah, it really does feel like its own scene, its own art.
It does. Now, I agree. And really, I feel like I could spend the rest of this review just talking about that scene because
me too.
It's the best thing about it.
So good.
But yeah, I mean, the movement of it, the sliding, the flexibility at play, I can't even fathom what that was like.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, they certainly do make it work. You talked earlier about the chemistry of Salma Hayek and Channing Tatum. Did anything about that relationship, aside from, like, if we remove the chemistry element, just from a writing perspective or a performance individually perspective, did anything about that work for you here?
Yes. Actually, in the beginning, when he's giving her the very extended lap dance in one of the early scenes of the film, I love that he asks if he can have her touch him. I love the nod to consent. Consent is critical. And I loved that. And that felt like there was a real maturity there and a sensitivity. And I loved that. And it also reminded me, not necessarily from a consent standpoint, but one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Soderbergh films is Out of Sight, which I think is an incredibly sexy film. And it had that same level of maturity, even though it was completely different characters in a completely different situation. So I really loved that. And I did love that they, even if it didn't work for me, even if it didn't feel believable, I loved that they were trying to capture this sense of comfort with each other and of being around each other and talking very easily. It just, while it didn't work, I liked it intellectually and logically, but just not in its execution, of course.
Yeah. I'm certainly right there with you. The consent component of it is really compelling and honestly a theme that plays throughout. I mean, there's a whole choreographed number here called Permission.
Yes.
And it's all about the dancer approaching these women again, provocatively, but doing it in a way that it's odd to hear this term, but to do it in a way that is honoring. We're not trying to do anything that would provoke them to be uncomfortable in any sort of way. And of course, the women certainly do respond to that. In fact, it's very compelling to see how they respond to it. It's really great. And so, yeah, the film does have this feminist mindset to it that I think is really great, especially when you couple that with this desire, this idea of finding ecstasy again. That's an element of this film that is fascinating, not just from Max's point of view, although the film emphasizes that, but even from Mike's point of view, because we find him in, you know, a similar spot to the first two films. Again, some of the redundancy of this film in terms of motive, but for him, it's all about finding some closure regarding his past and this lifestyle. And he's able to find that by offering up ecstasy to this stranger that was in dire need of it.
Yes.
And so it's interesting how they're able to find closure and romance in the ways that they're able to. Again, execution, it's uneven, but that idea I did find interesting here.
I really agree with you on that, and especially continuing that, because the first, I know we keep talking about this, but the first and the second film are so different from each other, and the third film really is trying to take, you know, the components of each of those and very much repeating the themes, as you've said. But
yeah,
I find that Soderbergh's through line, even though he didn't direct the second one, of course, is very, there isn't this undercurrent about money and this undercurrent of class. And stripping is arguably not sex work, although some would consider it adjacent to or a part of it. But what I really appreciate about this is that there is such a stigma around sex work and exotic dancing and stripping. And it's very clear that Mike is very ashamed of it, especially in the first film.
Yeah.
When he's like, no, 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 I want to make furniture. No, 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 I'm a businessman. Yeah. I'm not a dancer. That's not me. I'm not Magic Mike. Mm-hmm. And he really tries to disassociate himself from that, which he embraces in the second one, of course. But he's doing that again in the third one, where he's like, you know, no, I don't do that anymore. But what I find refreshing about it is that he's accepting his past without shame, which is great. He shouldn't be ashamed of it. And Max is also very respectful of him and of it. She never shames him, never demeans him, never is like, well, you're just a dancer or anything like that. She really believes in him and he believes in her. And they both, of course, say that explicitly. But that's really refreshing, too, that they both fully believe in each other and in each other's capabilities.
Absolutely. That is the driving force of how they find closure in this film. Really comes down to, it really has nothing to do with what they're doing,
although
it is some of it for the reasons you're talking about there in terms of acceptance. But it really comes down to belief. Just someone believing in you. That's what is perhaps the biggest driving wedge for Max, is that she's never, like, there's this through line throughout the film that she cannot ever finish anything she starts. And we come to find out that much of that is rooted in having no support around her.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly for Mike, he is having to move past, you know, these societal lenses that make him feel ashamed. And it's her belief in him, choosing him to be the director of the show, which he wanted nothing to do with.
Right.
He had no confidence in himself whatsoever, but she saw something.
Mm-hmm.
She saw this little spark that, you know, that made her take this leap, to take this risk. And it's something that they both use to find belief in each other. And regardless of how we get from A to Z, I, again, that's why I started off my opening thoughts by saying, over time, this is a film that I think I could come around on, or at least I can look past its flaws and appreciate more because of how it's able to tackle those ideas here, which I really do like, especially when you consider them through the Soderbergh lens and how he shoots this movie, the composition, that patented color palette that he is, so known for using here. And then there's the choreography of it all, as we talked about earlier, the music, of course. So they're like, there is so much to appreciate about his craft and what he brings that I still can't help but find myself thinking about this film and how effective it can be if you're able to look past those flaws. And admittedly, they are there. So I understand if some aren't able to get over that hurdle, but I think in time I might be able to, because I do really like that approach.
Yeah, I definitely agree that there are things to like. And I think that's where my frustration lies, is that there are so many great elements here. I just wish it all came together in a more cohesive way. But, you know.
And to something you said a moment ago as well, from a writing perspective, I also wish the film found a different way to contrive this relationship, because the beginning of XXL, while, yes, he does come to embrace the lifestyle a little bit more, and they go to this convention and they do the dance there. But the first act of XXL, which people might forget because it is so, it is eventually brazen by the end. But the whole thing for Mike in that film is that I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. Like I'm done. I want to do my business. I will do one more. I don't know if he ever used the word last dance in XXL, but that's more or less what happens, right? He's like, we'll go to convention. We'll do this one last time, one last bro trip, and then I'm done. That is the plot of that movie for as little plot as there is. I guess that's really all there is.
Yeah, that is all there is.
That's all there is. And that's essentially the same motivation here. It's like, well, okay, one last one, which is why I'm also dubious to your point earlier. Is this really the last one? I don't know. Maybe not. Probably not. We'll see how the box office turns out is, I guess, the answer to that.
Exactly.
And that's where I guess some of my frustrations come in. I wish there was a little bit of a different workaround to get us from A to Z, but you know, I still like what it's trying to do, even if it's just not all there. I also want to note that chemistry aside, because I don't necessarily disagree with you between Tatum and Hayek, but individually, I do like their performances. There's something about Channing Tatum and his ability to emote without dialogue.
Yes.
That over this last decade is so good, especially in these movies.
Yes.
He's able to convey so much without saying anything at all. And Soderbergh, that's where the chemistry really lies, is Soderbergh and his camera and Channing Tatum, because my God, he's able to capture him and frame him in such a way that is so great. And Tatum, man, he's able to give Mike so much nuance despite the redundancy.
Absolutely. And considering how great Channing Tatum is in Haywire, which I, another film I also love, I mean, mm-hmm. you are totally correct. Like, I cannot believe how much I like Channing Tatum, even when he's not saying anything. And I'm not even talking about like his traditional, attractiveness.
Just
his face. Just he's so likable. Mm-hmm. And
he is
conveying so much. Like, I'm a sucker for a tortured soul, and he's very much a tortured soul.
So good.
He's so good. Yeah.
I completely agree. I mean, even in the theater, I was like, I don't know, this romance seems a little contrived and a little rushed. But when he starts conveying those frustrations and how much he wants to be with Max and she keeps pushing him away, I mean, Soderbergh does a great job of letting the camera linger in Tatum. He offers some great empathy for sure.
He really does.
And it's great. I do love that about the film. And Hayek, similarly, I think does a great job of portraying this woman who feels like she doesn't have anything of her own and is desperate to, you know, to do something that she can call hers. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes through very well. Perhaps some of the stuff on the periphery with her husband, that's all very trite, but how she interacts with her daughter throughout the film, the driver/butler, not sure what his role is per se, but how that eventually crystallizes, I think, is poignant. And so by the end, I think she does such a great job of conveying how much this means to her, what she's willing to let go of, what she's willing to sacrifice, especially financially in terms of lifestyle, just to have this feeling of feeling fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And how that comes about, again, despite the execution of it, I think Hayek's performance taps into that enough here and does a good job.
Yeah, I think I do really like her as a performer, and I think she does an okay job. But thinking about it more thematically and kind of digging more into it, for me, and I do agree that this film has the best of intentions. It has really great intentions. Yes. It really is trying to be fun, and it's trying to toe a feminist theme. My issue is, though, is that it, for me, it ends up coming off very superficial in that it's not really as feminist as it thinks it is, because
sure,
it ends up still ultimately revolving around men, still ultimately like the whole Isabel Ascendant play is that's being revamped and having male dancers in it to be more provocative. The crux of the play originally is a woman deciding between her wealthy husband and her very kind and handsome lover. And
not obvious to what's happening in this film with her at all.
No, you know, it's so subtle, you might miss it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, and the and the woman in the film who's playing the woman in the play is like, oh, I hate this. I hate playing these period pieces. Why does she have to choose it all? And that's great. And I'm like, yes, yes, I like where this is going. But still, ultimately, it just it ends up being so superficial. And
she has to choose in the end.
She's still choosing. And that's what's frustrating to me. It's that okay, you're bringing in this very feminist sensibility. You're trying to do something deeper. You're trying to do something more. But yet ultimately she still has to choose. And it doesn't work. So I applaud its intention. I applaud what it aims for, but it left me hollow in that regard.
Absolutely. And I do think the script here is the weakest element of it. I'm not sure how much effort or time was put into it. Maybe it was one of those things where the studio just wanted to get this out, because I feel like maybe I'm wrong, because time since the pandemic is an enigma. I can't really keep up with it. But to me, it feels like they announced this last year, and then it's also out now.
Right.
Like, it felt like from announcement to release was probably less than a year. I'm probably wrong in that, but that's how it feels. So I don't know how much time was put into the script. Maybe not all that much. Maybe they didn't care. And that certainly does come through in the final product, because I agree with you. There is a hollowness to the ideas that we're talking about here, as much as I like them. And at times it is really strong. It is very good. But in other parts of it, maybe not so much. And I completely agree with you. That is a fascinating irony. I didn't really think about that too much until you brought it up there. But you're absolutely right that metaphor aside, in the end, she's not able to have her cake and eat it too.
Mm-mm.
Even though the film is trying to present that as why can't that be the case? And then in the end, and maybe Soderbergh, and this does feel very Soderbergh now that we're talking about it out loud to me, that the reality of it, and perhaps this is the difference between reality and art, is that having your cake and eat it too isn't really an option for most people.
Right.
And so maybe that's what Soderbergh is trying to tap into, that yes, when it comes to the art, when it comes to this performance that they're trying to put on, how they're trying to subvert ideas from the stage play, maybe we can toy with that idea and have a discussion around it, or dance around it in this specific case. But at the end of the day, when we're talking about real people and real relationships, that duality is mostly a facade.
Right.
Maybe that's what Soderbergh is going for, if I'm giving him credit, but maybe that's accidental, or me just giving the film more credit than it deserves. I don't know. But knowing Soderbergh, it feels like that. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if that was purposeful.
Right.
But I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving him too much credit there.
No, I don't. I actually don't think you are. I very much got the vibe that it is very much trying to make a commentary on commerce versus art, especially piggybacking off of Magic Mike XXL and in the beginning of this one too, because Mike has his dream job. You know, he has his business where he's making furniture. Isn't that great? That's what he wanted. That's what he aspired to do. Mm-hmm. And yet he's still not happy. He's still not satisfied. He's struggling. Mm-hmm. And so I very much think there is an intentionality there that you're picking up on, which is great. Like I said, and I know I feel redundant now. I just wish it connected better, but I do think it's there. And it's hard because I know some people didn't like the second one, but I know a lot of people who did, because the second one is just so fun and it's so kind of frivolous, and there's nothing really serious or important the way it is in the first film, where it's very heavy and very cynical and way and much more somber in it, in the way it's portraying dancing and Mike's life. But this one, I like I said, I think, you know, and what like we've been saying, it's trying to have it both ways, where it's still fun, it's still channeling that, but it is making a commentary. So I don't think that you're giving the film too much credit. I definitely think those themes are there.
Yeah, for sure. And again, as we keep talking about, a lot of this just comes, a lot of this just comes down to execution. And by trying to have a concoction of both of the first two films, I do think it does a disservice. That's what's so compelling about XXL. It is not trying to be the first Magic Mike at all.
No.
in any way. It simply wants to embrace what people, well, at least what perhaps a significant segment of the audience that walked out of the first Magic Mike disappointed because it was a Steven Soderbergh film and not a stripping film.
Right.
They pander to that audience much more at XXL, and it just becomes this fascinating film about camaraderie. That's really all that it is. And it has a lot more dancing, and it's really great in that way. This film certainly wants to do both. And you know, perhaps part of my disappointment as well, and maybe this is unfair because I do really like the camaraderie at the core of XXL, but they bring in all these dancers here. Do we even learn their names? I don't even know if we learn their names. We don't know anything about them. Nope. They're just there as eye candy and nothing more. I at least appreciate that in XXL, we do get to know them.
Yes.
That they're not there just for eye candy. They're a part of this brotherhood, this group that is on this journey together. And it becomes a movie about all of them, not just Mike, but all of them together. And this film doesn't want to do that. Instead, it's, again, it's Mike's personal life, him wrestling with his past and performance, which is a lot of the first film. And I just think this film becomes so disjointed as a result. And I think that's where my disappointment comes in. But I'm trying to maintain a level of optimism here because I do really like the Soderbergh-isms that are here, I think are very good. And I think in time I could come around to them, but I don't know. As we're talking about here, I just feel like I'm on a seesaw and I keep going back and forth as to how I feel about this movie.
Yeah. I feel like as we're talking about it, I kind of like it more just because there are so many elements that it's trying to get and it's trying to tackle. But yeah, no, I think the fact, and you nailed it, the fact that we don't know anything about the dancers, nothing, not their names, not their backgrounds, not what they aspire to, literally nothing. That's a huge disservice because I think that the core friends dancers in Magic Mike and in Magic Mike XXL are really funny and charming.
They are.
Yeah. And they work well together and they have great banter. Mm-hmm. So I would have loved some of that here. But I do know that, I think that was an intentional choice because Channing Tatum talked in his recent Vanity Fair interview that they were all very aware that in the first two films, even though the audience is intended to be women, even though women aren't the only ones attracted to men, but that's a whole other thing. But but they're clearly catering to women. Though they're catering to women as an audience, there aren't women in the film really. They're just kind of on the periphery. And so they wanted to focus more on having a central female character. And that's great. I like that. Again, theoretically, but what works so well in the first two, if you're trying to take those components, maybe that would have been a good one to have pulled and curated.
Now, I agree. And it's interesting because aside from Max, and there are a few other female characters here, such as the one that's actually in the show that's eventually hosting the final show that we see at the end. And there's also Max's daughter, but what do we learn about them? Probably not too much. I'm not sure if.
Yeah, Zadie.
If we can really.
Her daughter Zadie's writing a book and narrating the film.
Yeah.
That's about all we learn about her.
Yeah. We know that she's writing a book and she's able to glean something from her mother's life and from Mike. But we don't learn anything about her necessarily than these insights that she gathers. But I don't know what that infers about her either. So even the female characters that are here, you know, they're still on the periphery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This film is a walking contradiction.
Totally. And also, thinking back again, and I know we keep talking about XXL, but XXL is really kind of fascinating in its own way. But we have Jada Pinkett Smith as Rome, who is a really interesting character.
She is.
And to kind of ignore that she, and now granted, she's not central in the film, but to ignore that she was such an important part of the film, I think does a disservice to her role, because I found her far more interesting than anyone who was in Last Dance, unfortunately, but except for Mike, because Channing Tatum is lovely.
Because absolutely. And again, I won't say that she's the most compelling character necessarily, but at least with Cody Horn in the first Magic Mike, there's a level of intention with that character.
Yes.
Like she's a pivotal part of that movie. And you know, for the most part, I think I did like that dynamic between her and Mike, and ultimately where that crystallizes. Again, eventually, the latter films, who cares about that? You're right. They just completely disregard anything about that movie, which is interesting in and of itself. But she is there, and they're giving her nuance that she is able to work with that I just think is missing here outside of Max. And even with Max, it's a little bit disjointed for all the reasons we're talking about. So ultimately a disappointment, but I guess I'll be curious to hear from others that have seen this movie. All right, let's get to final thoughts. Do you have any concluding thoughts here on Magic Mike's Last Dance?
Just that I wish all of the film had been dancing and all of it had been as amazing as that rain sequence. That.
Yeah.
Oh. So good. So good.
I'm with you. I the film, I think, either needed to commit to either being the first movie again or being the second movie again or do something completely different.
Yes.
One of those options. But the approach here, I think, you know, set it back from the beginning. But, you know, Tatum is still, you know, he's a great screen presence. He's magnetic.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's very good here. He's, in terms of the traditional storytelling at play, he's the best part of it, I think.
Absolutely.
And the choreography, again, it's hard to deny the dancing in any of these movies. And that is really great. One scene we haven't mentioned yet is the bus scene. Incredible. So funny. Loved that. And again, I think it works because, you know, you like in a microcosm, you can separate that from this narrative and it's still so captivating to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it really does point back to why XXL was so great, because it's like, and who needs plot in here? Yeah. Like, don't try to overdo it. And if you're going to do it, at least Soderbergh commits to it in the first film.
Absolutely.
And so again, just having a foundation and knowing where you want to go really helps. But yeah, I did really like that sequence quite a bit, and I'm with you. I cannot say enough good things about the final dance at the end. I guess the last thing I'll say about it, the inclusion of the daughter and the levity there and covering her eyes or even walking her out at one point, that was really great.
That is really great.
Really good. And then we also mentioned, forgive me, I'm trying to look up the actor's name here, but the character that plays the driver or the butler to Max in this film, I think is really great, because he's, in so many ways, this character acts as Steven Soderbergh in the sense that so much of Soderbergh is about having like this, like he treats the camera as like another person in the room in a lot of his movies. Mm-hmm. And that is this character where he's just there listening, taking everything in, commenting on what we're seeing. sometimes Soderbergh is very direct in that, even, you know, and such as, for example, there's one moment where the camera is on him as he's literally listening to them in the backseat, or there's another moment where he's just outside the door.
Yes. You know, listening with a tea tray listening.
Yeah. So that to me is so Soderbergh. So I liked having that character. And then the context of, you know, what his life is, we don't learn much about him, but what we do learn, I think, makes for this fascinating little moment at the end where he is included into the club, so to speak, that I think is great. So mm-hmm. there are some good things here. Over time, I think I'll come to appreciate this more as a Tatum Soderbergh vehicle, but it is really hard to deny the uneven flaws that this film has. So mild recommendation, I guess. I don't think anyone has to rush out to theaters to see this. If you just want to watch this in the comfort of your home, maybe that is the place. But I don't know, at the same time, watching this in a theater, given the choreography and the color palette and the cinematography here, maybe that's also, like, maybe you just want to watch provocative dancing on a big screen.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the go-to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not mad at that. Yeah, I mean, that is a spectacle in and of itself, but, you know, and that's enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I...
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I can't wait to see, hopefully, Channing Tatum and Steven Soderbergh team up again, because I really love what they do. So I would love to see more.
I agree.
Together.
I agree. Even if it's outside the Magic Mike universe.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Magic working Mike. Together.
Yeah. 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 Just every time they work together, I'm compelled. So yeah,
yes.
I'm definitely with you on that for sure. We have a written review of this up at InsessionFilm.com that you can go and check out. I'll have thoughts at Letterboxd as well if you want to continue the conversation over there at Letterboxd.com/InsessionFilm. Hit us up on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We would love to know your thoughts, if you agree or disagree with any of our takes here. And as I noted at the beginning of this, Megan, you do have a really great review of this up as well. Tell us about it, and where can we find you on social media?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my review is at Edge Media Network, which is a queer website, and that's where I review written film reviews. I also do a weekly podcast at Spoiler Piece Theater, where we spoil films. And yeah, and you can follow me on social media. I'm at Twitter, on Twitter at Opinionist World, and Instagram and Letterboxd at The Opinionist.
Yeah, please go and check out her work. Really great stuff. Are you guys covering this over on your podcast at all?
We did. We did cover it.
It's already up.
It is up.
All right. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go check that out then. Curious to hear you guys talk further about it. Please go check out Megan's written review of it up as well. Really appreciate you being here, Megan. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for having me, JD. This was great. I loved it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely have to get you back. Either for the next Magic Mike, which at this rate might be in the next year or so.
Right?
Or, you know, there's going to be lots of other stuff, but we'll definitely keep in touch. So really appreciate you. Thanks for listening, watching, everybody. We will see you all next time on the In Session Film Podcast. Go watch XXL. It's really great.